This was an orchestrated, coordinated attack.
These monsters will be punished for their reprehensible actions.
I'd like to combine forces, work this case together.
Just like old times.
It's all the makings of a bomb.
Murder, domestic terror.
I know well who these people are.
They sell young girls, they kill people.
She's the most important witness in the country.
It's a hit, we gotta move!
He shot her like it was nothing.
Charged with a litany of heinous crimes.
We're missing something. Think, think.
Oh. One of these bombs goes off and our city is torn apart.
You need to get this conviction.
How you convict him?
I don't really care.
We move hard, we move fast. I am going to help you.
I'm coming for you.
Evacuate first, ask questions later.
We have 9 million people in this city to protect.
Get out of there right now.
Let's move.
Here for a long and overdue updated Law & Order SVU and organized crime chat. We have super fan Danielle. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
And we have Josh Dugan from Munch My Benson. And that's right, indeed. Guys. It is an SVU themed podcast.
Yeah. Ribaldly.
Munch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, we're.
Remember when someone on Wikipedia went to his page and acted like active from 2022? I'm like, guys, you do know Richard Belzer is retired. I don't think he's coming back unless they do a Zoom from France.
Yeah. Yeah. He's working for the DA's office in France now.
Well, what's funny is I even went through the TV show Luther, and Idris Elba even said, his character says at one point, give this to my pals in New York. I know a guy named Detective Munch. So now it's
so Luther's in the universe.
Yeah, yeah, now it's even more meta for a universe that already includes, yeah, Saint Elsewhere, Homicide, Chicago, and even freaking X-Files.
Yep. And Arrested Development.
And Arrested Development, yep. Maybe Sesame Street. Yeah. The Wire. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, definitely The Wire.
This is one of my favorite universes. So Danielle, how did you get into this USA Network bingeable show before binging was a thing?
So I've always watched it, like, on and off. Like, there would be on TV all the time. You come from school and be on TV. I'd
so
watch it.
You were
it.
Like my sister. You'd watch part of that.
But then, because before this, I was really big into NCIS for the longest time.
Yeah.
But then everybody left, and I got bored with it. And so I'm like, oh, I'll give SVU a try. And now here I am, like, 10 years later. So.
Fair enough. I mean, I like how they pass on an NCIS note. That is another one. Is like all the lights could go off and it could still be on. But I will at least give them credit for Gary Cole was a good idea to replace Mark Harmon and then give them at least 5 episodes to warm up. So it's like, okay, we're passing the torch, but we're going to do this naturally as opposed to pull a Hawaii 5-0. Hey, where is half the people? Oh,
they're all gone.
And we're not going to even respect your ability as a viewer as to why they're missing, even though they were kind
of making too much money.
You're making too much money and the writer doesn't care. Oh, well, bye, Felicia. Josh, you've described many times and I do like takes on how it's like, hey, I would have ended this episode a little better. Or, hey, wow, that was actually a very vibrant twist. Well, this blurs the line between a Lifetime episode and a B-movie for USA Network, but hey, it's sure. Well acted. When did you decide, hey, I want to get into podcasting and talk about all kinds of pop culture and do it with a beloved friend of mine who I'm introducing to the madness?
Munch by Benson actually started out as a blog back in like 2007 or 2008.
Oh man, dude.
we were writing. I had this like unhinged persona that I was writing as, where I couldn't tell the difference between actors, guest actors, and other roles that they played.
It didn't help that sometimes they were playing roles much like them. Like you even look at the original Law and Order, and it's like you'd have Chevy Chase playing a guy who's said drunken slurs that he didn't mean. And so it is just funny how they would play into that. It's like, okay, we want to feed your ego. And it blew my mind even more how I would see actors before they were famous and then other ones who I typically couldn't stand, but they were unrecognizably good there because for whatever reason they were told by their agent, hey, we do this in two takes. You cannot goof this up. You cannot misbehave. Right. There will be no misbehaving. And it is funny how Dick Wolf, Renee Belzer, all those head writers there, Warren Leed and company have been the kings of, they hear one thing from you, you are fucking gone. They will not do it if some extra doesn't look right and is refusing to take the assistant director's direction. They'll delete that scene and reshoot it later. I've heard from people who were even on is like, hey, nothing personal. The scene, we just don't like how it's shot. You cannot tell anyone, put this on your IMDb. When sister show Jason Bigg was being very temperamental in Chicago PD, Dick Wolf gave him a subpoena instantly. You will go see this anger psychiatrist tomorrow. End of story. Otherwise, I will find a reason for you to not come back to set because there is no yelling on set.
Well, and I mean, he's why what's her face?
Sophia Bush left.
Yeah.
And I applaud her because I hate it when it happens, but it is what it is. And
but for no one to step in on set and do anything about that, it seems fucked.
I think that according to Carlos Bernard, that's right, Tony Almeida from 24, who now directs various episodes of Dick Wolf's Chicago Fire and FBI. And I like how they do bring in like former actor turned directors because that helps. Yeah. But he noticed when he was growing up and, you know, younger, that a lot of directors are afraid to approach the leads. He's like, come here.
Well, in TV, you. I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, all it takes is just, I don't like the way he walks and you're gone. You're like, really?
Yeah. Well, TV directors are just, you know, they're supposed to make sure that the train's leaving the station on time, basically.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like an auteur thing. It's the Sopranos they need to get the thing done. Yeah.
Sopranos directors often said they had to be a whole season before they actually got more creative, where they're like, hey, I want to have this one Hitchcockian shot. I want to start the episode this way.
I mean, unless you're talking about a show where the director is also like a co-EP or something, you know, where they have creative input for the whole season, and maybe it, you know, they're block shooting everything.
You've got
two or three directors on the season.
That you direct three episodes back to back. Yeah, that's as much creative freedom as you get. They're getting better at that now with a 13 episode arc, and Dick Wolf has played into that with a lot of limited miniseries as well. And Tom Fontana, I applaud him. He's still continuing his St. Elsewhere universe with City on a Hill, and it's the same kind of deal. He's just knows how to get his writers to assemble five different subplots and have it all gel and make sense together, and then throw in an Easter egg at the very end. Whoa, isn't that one place from? Yeah, well, that is the St. Eligius Hospital. He just said it. So a lot has changed in recent years. You know, a few different team members have left. We don't have the deputy chief, we don't have Cat anymore, but now we have vice squad detectives Joe Velasco, played by Octavio Vassano of the Paramount Plus show Coyote, and we have Grace Muncie, played by Molly Burnett, who you might know from various movies and shows such as Queen of the South, Days of Our Lives, and even freaking Shooter for USA Network. So what do we think of these two new characters on here so far? You know, everyone has a like it or hate it person. I know I'm a Curtis fan, for instance, on the original Law and Order, but many people seem to love to bash Benjamin Bratt for whatever reason. So what's you guys?
He's too pretty.
I know you guys aren't. What's his name? Danny Pino.
Danny Pino? Amaro?
Yeah, not everyone's an Amaro fan. What's you guys' take on these two? Are they intriguing, or are they kind of just, they're acceptable, or they're ho-hum?
You want to go first?
Yeah, you can go first.
It's a free
for me to go. Okay.
Yeah, there are no right or wrong answers. Just what are you thinking? What could they do better? What do you
Velasco? I didn't like it first, but he's grown on me. I'll give it that much. I don't know why, but he's grown on me, and I'm like, okay.
They didn't really give him much to do those first five episodes. Yeah. And it was like, but then they gave him a few personal things. He really clicked. I just thought he was acceptable. I was like, okay, competent acting, but I'm not getting a character yet. You know, there's all, just like I am with the FBIs, let alone even some of these other Stephen Bochco, David E. Kelly shows, if you want to go that far back. It's like, yeah, half the season is them pretty much being a featured extra, and then finally they get more than a few lines and get something shocking and get the performance of their life in an Emmy. But yeah, I was kind of reminded a bit when he started approaching that sports superstar, and he was like, never be close to your icons. Like, okay, cool. Oh, yeah. So he's playing into pop culture now. He's got a persona now. He's not just, you know, a henchman, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah, once I like had like interacted with the team more and gave him his own like story, like backstory, I'm like, okay, I like you. I can be with you.
I can do Muncie, it.
I do not like Muncie. I don't.
No, that's fine. Yeah, she's kind of a hothead.
I don't know what it is. I don't know. She just rubs me the wrong way. And like, I was talking to my friend about this not too long ago. Like, I don't know, just her personality. I feel like that character would be better off on Organized Crime as opposed to SVU.
I feel like most of these Vice Squad guys have always been Chicago PD candidates, but even Voight can't put up with them because they won't even break the law for him.
I can't deal with that show. Chicago PD is just like, what the fuck?
I hear you. There's plenty of times where it's lost me. I think Chicago Fire is the best out of all of them.
Oh, because, I agree. 100%.
Because they're actually, you know, they're not trying to be emergency. And they're not even trying to be ER. They're trying to be just, here's office politics, and kind of like Ray Donovan, here's the big bad this season, and here's how we're going to wipe the floor with him. Like, seeking some outside help. But no, I hear you. PD is kind of more just, it's a little distressing because there's just never, kind of like some of the bullshit in Yellowstone. It's like, it's great until they then go back to the ranch. I don't want to see the ranch. I want to see all the, you know, the shootouts and the villains who are scheming to take the land. I don't want to see all this other bullshit.
Well, with Yellowstone, I'm just rooting for the Native Americans.
That too. There's not.
Yeah, like I want them to take back their land.
I want to see them kill all these elites.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with Jamie, but then they will always spend three episodes way too long. It's like, yeah, but I knew you were going to do that. So
yeah,
what the fuck, writers? We weren't born yesterday.
Yeah.
I think you're just too in love with the sound of your voice. But yeah, no, I hear you. PD is kind of like those later seasons of Hill Street Blues. You're watching it for the arrests and some of the acting, but then it kind of loses you. It's like, I really don't know if I connect to anyone anymore because I don't get an answer to anything. I know that like real life, there's not going to be any answers, but at the same time, that's kind of rubs me the wrong way. Like last season of Sopranos is like, oh, so there isn't any solution, but you introduced all this shit. That's underwhelming. It seems like now that they're doing a good job of just saying, hey, you know, they're focusing on Vincent. She's still the protective mom. She's taken down. They're doing, again, just kind of what most shows do better now, which is have a free episode arc. She still has these stuck up bureaucrats who don't respect her as a person or even as a woman. And Finn, I like how he's a sergeant still, but he's actually getting something to do. Because last season, you know, this is season.
Kind of sat there.
Sat in the chair. I was like, what the hell, guys?
I mean, he's got a tour and he's got to do, like, you know, Ice-T, they have him for 2 days a week, I think. I'm pretty sure they just have him for 2 days.
I think they do.
And yeah, so they have to like plan out, like, okay, this is what we're going to shoot with Ice and like whatever.
And a few seasons ago, I want to say, I guess season 18 or 19, I like how they actually brought in a real life factor into his character. Like, hey, he used to be in the army. I'm like, okay, awesome. So no wonder he and Sailor didn't get along. It was just like if they were in the same barracks and one of them had an attitude.
Sure, army and marines don't mix.
Why do you think so many forgot about that? I saw so many when Organized Crime first premiered, they're like, hey, why doesn't Finn and Saber want to stand together. I'm like, do you not remember that last season where they were at each other's throats? They couldn't stand each other.
Well, it was largely like, basically it started after the end of season 9 where, cause you know, we fucking just recorded like 10-1, I think, or 10-2. And so, it's all because of it is, it's all going back to how Stabler kind of fucked over Lake, and Lake was ST's partner. So
yeah. And a lot of people didn't like Lake.
Well, like, not me. Free Chester Lake. He needs to come back to the unit now.
Oh, sorry. Not like, yeah, I actually like Chester. I'm thinking of the one gal Stabler had an affair with, played by.
Oh yeah. Danny Beck. Yeah.
Danny Beck. Yeah. And it would suck because like two of those episodes were really good, but then her parts is like, and Connie Nielsen is a pretty good actress and everything else I've seen her in yet.
But she was doing this weird fucking like
Irish accent.
It wasn't even that. She was so her character is apparently like written to be like Danish but American also. And so like it's a Danish New York accent. It's so fucking
weird. They just could have done what Stargate does, where they could have just done one cameo with, you know, Benson, because Hargate was taking time off, instead of let's create a whole new arc. And it's like, no, you don't need to create a new arc.
Yeah, that was rough.
But at least it lasted 4 episodes as opposed to a whole season. It's not like those later years of LA Law where people keep leaving and people are just asleep at the wheel. Organized crime has really changed up. Now, you know, Stabler's not about revenge anymore or playing.
They're on showrunner number 4 now?
Yeah, 4 or 5 now, something like that.
I gotta give them credit though, because like, doesn't need a survivor. It's not like they're talking any differently. They're just mainly just introducing different stuff. But yeah, it is like, I liked how every once in a while it was kind of like other woof shows like New York Undercover. It's like, okay, now we're doing a bust the last 1 or 2 episodes, and now back to the main cream of the crop. Mm-hmm. But now it's just like Kingpin of the week. I'm like, I'm cool with that, because sometimes I think they're actually going to make it to the end of the episode, even though they're not.
Well, they do, because they're doing multiple episode arcs still. Yeah. You know, it is meant to be, you know, more serialized.
At least it's not about, now I gotta avenge his parents, now his kids are
right. Yeah. The less of the Stabler family we see, the better, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, nothing against them as actors, but I know what you mean, where it's like, okay, Stabler, I know you're not going to do anything about this.
Yeah, it's momentum killing. Every time it's a scene with the family, it's just like, okay, well, how can we?
He was kind of like Jack Bauer on 24 before it was a thing, where he's like, okay, Jack, if you get close to this person, they're going to die. So please don't do that.
or they'll at least be like cornered by a cougar.
Oh.
an actual mountain lion.
You had to go there. Why? Oh,
Kim was trapped by that mountain lion for like 3 episodes, right?
Right, and it didn't.
It felt like it, at least.
Surrounded by a psycho, but
yeah.
I love 24, but like SVU, it does have its trope, and it's like, I know you guys can do better.
It started good, at least, or it started interesting. I mean, there are tons of problems with 24, but
I get you. There's plenty of seasons. I hate it when he went to New York.
Yep.
Oh man. All together. What would you want to sum up as the pros and cons here now? Because they keep giving him speaking of 24, Jet, the hacker chick on Organized Crime, is kind of the Chloe of the show.
Yeah.
She gives her smart ass remarks, and I applaud the actors how they stage every scene, especially at every conference, because. One of the guys is too distracted, and one of the other narcs will often just be over focused, and Stabler's just cool in the corner but kind of a statue, and Jet has always got her legs cross-legged, you know, in a seat while wearing a business suit. And I'm like, I like it. See, that those are the little subtle things, instead of just waving it in the viewer's face and saying, see what I did there. Is like, no, I see it, that's awesome.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I like, I like things about the O or the OC. I think I like things about organized crime. I've barely watched it. Maybe two episodes of the OC. But no, okay. Organized crime of organized crime. There are things I like in theory. I don't know that it's. I think having four showrunners, if you don't count Matt Olmsted, who was, you know, fired before it ever took off.
Yeah, I don't count that. He just gets credit because.
Yeah, but I mean, being on showrunner number four and the second one this season, there is a lack of sort of unified vision directing the show, which I think is more necessary with a show that's serialized, you know?
Kudos to them bringing in John G. Jagunsak, who started his career as the cinematographer on Homicide and then ended up directing all the best episodes of shows like Oz and all these long.
I mean, he's basically the person responsible for the SVU like palette, you know?
Yeah. Do you think so? Midway through, you know, they introduced a Italian Interpol agent who Stabler knew while working overseas in Europe. I just guarantee you that's going to come back at least near the end of the season.
Oh, it has to. I think it has to at some point.
Mm-hmm. He's like, hey, I can't either that or it's got to end with him saying, I love Vincent.
Which maybe that happens this week.
Maybe. Tomorrow. Sorry, guys, if we're a little outdated whenever the hell this comes out. But it's always changing. And I get it. There's going to be a soapy element, there's going to be something that's over dramatized. But so, why do you think we all come in and this stands out and avoids being mostly formulaic?
I think the only reasons the OC, I keep calling it the OC. I think the only reasons that OC works is because they're basically just doing Stabler story service.
Right.
And. Yeah.
He was in it for 10 years. He was gone for 10 years. Now he's back.
But now I think that like Maloney's basically like, no, you brought me in here. I'm an EP. He has a lot more say over what happens. And so then it's just like, okay, well, where do I want my fucking character to go? And I think they're doing an okay job of making that work. I don't know that
I just enjoy the
villains fest. of the quarter season or whatever. I don't know that those are all working well. But
they pretty much need another untouchable person, and at the same time, like,
but it better not be fucking Wheatley. God damn it! Awful shit.
Really? What wasn't
it? I hated Wheatley so much. By the end, it was he was in a cartoon. He was a cartoon character in a fucking show that's about organized crime. Like, any verisimilitude is just out the window every time he starts like literally chewing on scenery, not figuratively.
It is
like he would pick up part of the desk and just eat it. he was unwatchable, and the character was fucking absurd.
I agree, it was absurd, but I think he was just playing to the camera. I'm just a practice fan, so I call me biased, you know.
Oh, I don't dislike him in general. I liked the practice too, but I do not think he worked in this at all.
No, fair enough. I feel like he was kind of off his leash and he was having fun. It was being their 2.0 version of Heat.
Yeah.
And you know how over the top Pacino is nowadays, where I'm like, that's Pacino. Oh, wow.
I mean, Pacino's been that since, what, 1980?
Scent of a Woman.
Two?
But yeah.
No, I mean, like, Scarface is what sent him down the wrong path.
Yeah.
Like, pretty much since then, he's had maybe, what, three nuanced performances, and everything else is just insane.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
It's basically, what, Sea of Love, Manglehorn, and I'm sure there's another one I'm forgetting. Not Jack and Jill.
Let's just say The Recruit. Because everything else is, like you say, trash. 88 minutes, no thanks. No, I agree. They let them be a little over the top, but I'm kind of used to it. They get a little too cute for their own good. I just dug this three-part crossover this time, where it was just like, hey, they all got to put aside their differences. There's more Dog Day Afternoon scenarios. And let me just say, best Christmas episode ever. So, long story short, you know, a few weeks before Christmas, they all get caught up with all the drug lords and they have to find a creative way to get out of there. And I actually dug how they did it, because I would have lost a little respect had they resorted to simple gunfights. It's like, now it's just fantasy.
I'm very worried about eventually having to cover the premiere crossover event. Like when we eventually roll that,
because
we
do like
random episode every week. No, I won't, because I'm going to have to talk about three episodes of television instead of just one. Yeah. It's going to be rough.
It's not like the recent NCIS event that they did where it was like, and as I predicted, it was like, okay, pretty kick-ass episode for the first part, Hawaii kind of whatever, but okay guest stars, and then LA had nothing what to do with it whatsoever. It was just bullshit.
Yeah, yeah, that's poorly, fun.
And it always looks like it's shot in a camcorder, so that's why I always have trouble watching it. So that's where it becomes Walker Texas Ranger, where I'm like, okay, it's a drinking game now. Yeah, no, I hear you, but kudos to the original show now. I mean, the original Law and Order is now very, very gritty, and they got an interesting display where Detective Shaw has to do more urban crimes and Cosgrove has to kind of put his own bigotry and bias aside and realize, hey, that whatever your politics, you got to, you know, and not be personal. And speaking of the practice, what's her name? Cameron Manheim is on there, and she gets to do a lot of her sign language, which is just very fascinating. She did that recently on SVU, which I thought was neat, because
it's like Benson speaking German.
Yeah.
I mean, because Hargitay speaks what, four languages conversationally?
I saw that inside the Actor Studio episode, and much like the Bryan Cranston one, even though they were limited in clips to show just their iconic TV role, it was still fascinating. It's like they had really great answers for what they would be doing now if it hadn't been modeling turned acting. It was like, yeah,
sure.
But so then I can't blame her for wanting to stick with this for so long, because she was in so many cult movies in the 80s and 90s, like The Perfect Weapon and Lake Placid, and she either would keep getting her scenes deleted or I mean, she almost would have played Kira on Deep Space Nine, and she was in one of those Power Rangers movies, and they deleted her scene. So that had to be, I think she just said, I will, you know, press the eject button when I really don't have any passion with this anymore. But I don't know what she wants to do.
It also helps being, the second highest paid actor on TV.
Yeah, you just can't. Especially during COVID, I think she did said, I got to hold on to this a little longer, because you know, rerun money is only good for so long. I do applaud.
Although them. With 23 seasons of rerun money, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, so. She'll literally get a check every day for $10. But
I think the way residuals work is, I think it's quarterly.
And she's an executive producer, so she's definitely getting a more return.
Yeah, she's getting producer fees too. Yeah. On everything from season 16 on, I think is when she started.
Yeah,
getting producer fees.
I actually especially dug the episodes that she directed, because they were way, way more suspenseful, and the episode went a different abstract way than you usually get. But
because she's not as involved in the case, probably.
Yeah. She gets to slap Finn on the wrist and say, don't do that again. Any character that you would actually like to see from the past, because they pretty much have done it all to death, you know.
I'm already on record with Lake, so go ahead, Danielle.
Cassidy's already been well worn. We've already gotten visits from. I actually applauded them bringing former Captain Cragen in to just expose Stabler's. You know why his dad was such a shithead. Why he's had to not be his dad. But other than Dr. Warner, I can't think of who needs to come back.
I would like to see. I want to see Kat come back just for an episode, just to see her back.
Oh, something. She should at least have her own vice squad.
I like how they brought Garland back for that one episode.
Yeah.
Last year, I want to see Kat back for an episode at least. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I want to see Rollins again at some point later on down the road. But whenever that happens, it happens, I suppose.
Oh, 1,000%.
She at least still exists within the universe. Kat's like Poochie now.
Jeez, that's true. Yeah, to go there.
Hey, that's how they dealt with her, not me. I'm just being honest.
I'm like, just joking with
you. They poochied her off to her other planet, because she has not been mentioned since. I mean, Rollins is mentioned the next week, thankfully. So
yeah, totally. I have to applaud them for bringing in Barrick. She's now a lieutenant, but she was Annabelle Scores' character who was originally introduced on Criminal Intent. But I was like, see, can you kind of do that a little more? Because hot take, I kind of didn't like how they kind of went with the Barracair drunk Krillin, you know, and this kind of felt like a redemption arc, just like, you know, I mean, that's actually how I was with Florix Kragan on the original Law and Order. He just kind of wasn't gelling with the original cast, but he was great on SVU. So I was like, yeah, hey, you know, just redemption for that character. And Law and Order is still just very much like 24, just good at making you finish an episode, even if you don't really care for half of where the subplots went. You know, it's like you're intrigued because they're doing anything you could probably do better or you couldn't do better, just better. Even when it's not great, you know, there's something about the energy in the room that you can't get that back. That's a special kind of magic.
Yeah.
Kudos to all these editors and production managers. And again, for even encouraging all these other New York shows like Person of Interest to shoot the way they shoot, just fast and blunt. I think it was Briscoe portrayer himself, Jerry Orbeck, who was on record as anytime he introduced a member, he was always like, you get two takes, kids, and that's it. So I believe it.
Yeah, they have a lot of setups. There are a lot of company moves on the show.
Oh, totally. And I was very blessed with the X-Files fan retrospect gals. Some of them worked as production assistants on shows like Third Watch. And, you know, when that started becoming a thing in the late 90s, early 2000s with everything like West Wing or what have you, is like, and there's a reason they do it. It, you know, it's not going to get any better. You know, so that's why I do actually like that, how there is no, because I would hear horror as a former extra, I would see people fuck around all day. I'm like,
oh, I just interviewed for a job today. I'm an industry guy.
Nice, dude.
I did like 5.5 years in LA.
Oh, and it's just depressing because you see all these people who you love and you hear horror stories about. It's like, wow, Sandra Bullock, Gerard Butler, so-and-so didn't know their lines and they hold up a whole day of filming. That's a liability.
I was listening to an episode of WTF and Steven Root was talking about how he went in, his first acting gig ever was an episode of Jake and the Fat Man. And so he goes in and he's acting opposite of, it's William Conrad, right? Who's playing the Fat Man.
Cannon.
Yeah, Cannon. And so he's acting opposite of fucking William Conrad, who's, I mean, at that point, he was
a geezer,
late 60s, in his 70s, like old dude. And Conrad is reading his fucking lines off of cue cards. And Steven Root is like, is this how all shows are shot? You know, because it's his first time on set as an actor. And it's like, nope. That's just how William Conrad is not going to learn his fucking lines because he's drunk the whole time.
I actually had to tell my father that the other day. You do know that's what Marlon Brando did the rest of his life. No. I'm like, how have you not heard that? Multi Law and Order actor Eric Roberts is actually now infamous for that. And I believe it.
Well, dudes, he does
20 movies a year.
We just did his episode of SVU.
Great episode. Like
about 2 months ago.
A vigilante who shoots a murderer.
Well, he didn't shoot him though. He ended up not being
suspected because
he's the suspect. Yeah, because he's the like sort of are they called guardian angels? It's his character is sort of ripped from a headline, if you will. Trying to load up his IMDb page is nuts. He's got he's closing in on 700 credits. Fucking 100.
And it's funny how he's one of many B movie actors who we kind of let get away with murder, while there's others who were like, oh, you can do better, buddy. And we kind of see how the industry's just so oversaturated. All these B movie guys who are great actors but will never be A-listers, like Ernie Hudson or Lance Henriksen. You know? Yeah,
well, I mean, to be fair, Roberts does have an Academy Award nomination on it, and multiple Golden Globe Award nominations.
That's all that matters.
Like, yeah, I mean, he did. There was a point in time in which Eric Roberts was
pretty cool,
was inarguably an A-lister, but it's been 37
years. It's no longer 86 anymore. But it is interesting how, and now we're seeing all our A-listers, they have to take it to the bank. It's like, I am miscast in half of these movies and I can't say no to them. I'm The Rock, Kevin Hart, Idris Elba, Oscar Isaac. Fuck,
Jennifer Lawrence walked away for like basically walked away for a year and a half or so and was like, I'm only doing stuff I want to do, and had to like take the reins of her career because she was fucking sick of like not really having control over what she was doing.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are having to fire their agents now, and I think a lot of agents are being even pickier. Is like, ah, you know, you want that Marvel or DC money. I know you want it.
Well, I was just watching a panel she was on, and she was talking about how she wasn't getting, like, she at least felt like she wasn't getting scripts from people that she wanted to actually work with. So
even people who should be the lead in something now are still kind of being part of an ensemble, like Anthony Mackie and who's the other guy who we all like, and we're like, he should be the star. even these other people who kind of had a comeback through TV, like Thandie Newton, or I'm now even seeing a lot of them are now doing just, again, video on demand movies with, you know, semi-retired guys like Mel Gibson and Bruce Willis. So it's just like, it does, the whole casting process does work in mysterious ways, and it doesn't help that some of these producers are just Wall Street tycoons who kind of go with the Netflix money. It's like, hey, I can burn $2 million, here you go. And almost some of them I do think inspired SVU episodes, even though they're not on the record. Is like, yeah, I'm sure that's a Wall Street tycoon of a tycoon of a tycoon, you know, someone who knows someone who knows someone,
right,
who's an advisor, here's how this person would probably act, and now we got to change it because, or the writer just got too creative for their own good, because we don't want a lawsuit of saying, I see what you did there. Other future storylines you'd like to see them explore, or even see it conclude in some capacity on a good note instead of just, oh, it ends. Because, I mean, I've always liked the evolution. I liked how Munch became less of a smartass over time and more of a kind of comfort guy and kind of naturally funny. I like how Stabler stopped trying to, you know, headbutt a suspect or brutalize him and break, you know, get suspended. But for a while now, it's kind of just whatever goes, and the unpredictability works in its favor. And other times you're just like, yeah, that episode, like two seasons ago, it just seemed like Vincent is never going to find happiness. She's never going to be able to find a reliable boyfriend or husband.
And then we're just going to have to watch Noah episodes.
Oh, I kind of find that kid cute.
No,
not everyone can do more Barrymore level, Josh.
More episodes need to start with Baby Doe in a dog cage, being force fed dog food.
Oh
no!
Terrible. You are terrible.
It's only happened once.
Don't do that. I'm sure we'll still see Carisi a bit, but let's be honest, he's moving to Florida with Roland, so.
Well, she's got a job at Fordham. She's not going anywhere.
Mm-mm. Well, and at the same time, I think that's where they're going to do some more crossover episodes. Is like, Roland's going to call in over Zoom. Liv, I need you.
Yeah.
There was another Florida connection there, too, on Organized Crime the other day, where the Miami DEA was doing a measuring contest and fucked up their case. And I was like, that's interesting, because it's like, anytime Florida enters the picture, it's always bananas, you know. Like, there's that one, or it's like, what was it, NYPD Blues Army Wives actress Kim Delaney was a crooked, like, sergeant who framed a few cops. she framed Benson's half brother, I think,
Simon. Yeah, Simon, she was from New Jersey, though. She was in Jersey.
I'm like that they put Simon finally to rest, because it did get to where it was kind of like almost Haunting of Hill House. It's like, this family is dysfunctional for a reason, because one of them is always going to be a deceptive thief, and the other is always going to be a giver. And, you know, I've always been taught, you know, it's like, you get free strikes, you know, it's just not meant to be. It's like, hey, one of my pals just lost his dad, who he, you know, he liked where he was from, but he did not respect the person as a man, you know, because he wasn't loyal to his mom. So I like how this show still does bring up just gray areas. It's definitely at its best when it brings up a gray area, but without feeling like, oh, you ended it too soon. I was actually about to cry at the, what was the recent episode? There was one case that they revisited a few different times.
It
was like one cold case, and then they finally, I think it was before the rowing episode. Anyway, it was a more recent one. Anyway,
I had seriously, like, the almost the instant that I watch an episode of SVU, it's fucking gone.
No, that's fine.
Like, I've just forgotten it because
I have to jettison because it is a lot.
I've got to clear the hard drive all the time because, like, I have to watch these fucking things twice every time I record, and I've already seen it once.
Oh yeah, and just like Homeland or Breaking Bad, it will skull fuck you into where you're just like, good, but too much good. I feel just as
close. It's not always good though. There have been over 500 episodes of SVU. I would say probably 200 of them are like not good.
Oh really?
I mean, we rate every one of them.
I'm easy to please. So what do I know?
There are some very bad ones.
Barba's end was awful. I hated that
episode. Yeah, Undiscovered Country is the worst episode we've covered yet. Barba's exit. His last episode. Undiscovered Country, where the baby
has to pull the plug on the baby.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting because
episode's terrible.
I hate it.
Please, I implore you to go back and watch that then, because it is awful. It's so bad, and like it's terribly written. It's also interesting. Very out of
character, and I'm just like, what the
heck? I thought it was in character, but it's more because I'm used to the original Law and Order. Because then Jack is like, can't have my. I've always kind of gotten a playing God aspect from Barba, so it made sense to me.
I beg you to go back and watch it.
No, I've seen them all a bunch of times. I have no issue with any of them.
It's so bad. It's so, so bad.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the U.S. We are in the U.K. We are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
We're on all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Like, it's the two parents are terrible.
I agree that that's as much as you're gonna get from me. Yes, those parents did overact.
But. I hated how they introduced Stone, like we're supposed to know him, and we're supposed to remember his fucking father, who hasn't been on the original series. I mean, who hasn't been in the Law and Order universe in over 20 years, and we're supposed to care about him at that point.
Exactly.
Are you talking about Stone?
Ben Stone, mm-hmm. But his dad, Ben. Yeah.
Well, I think that was fair because I'm a fan of all of it. That was a good tribute to the original.
But like, they're tying in a character that no one gives a shit. The only one who gives a shit about it really is Chernuchin, who worked on Law and Order, the original series, when Moriarty was still on it. like, it's been 20 years. It's reasonable to expect people to not give a shit about who this guy's dad was.
I like that kind of fanfare. Just pat on the back.
Theoretically, sure, but it's not even this show. It's a different show. Like, it's not even SVU. Yeah, they're in the same universe. But, like, you're... I mean, I have so many problems with seasons 19 and 20. Chernuchin doesn't understand how TV works.
No, like 18, 19, and 20 for me, I'm just like, I'll watch them, but just...
18's rough. 18's rough with the one Rick Eyed season, but 19 and 20 are like next level where you're just like, they don't understand how the world works.
Season 18, what was rough about it? No, this is
fine. Well, that's the one Rick Eyed season that that was... We haven't done a ton of 18 episodes. I know one of the ones we did was brutal, but 19 and 20, we've done a lot of season 19 episodes, and almost all of our lowest rated episodes are from season 19.
Okay, well, now I'm just trying to remember just what was a big deal, because I actually dug how Rita Calhoun, played well by Elizabeth Marvel, was just an interesting thing, and having to kind of...
Yeah, I mean, she's fine. Like, I like Elizabeth Marvel.
That season was written when, like, produced. It was just, I don't know.
Okay, well, it feels
like they didn't understand how any of the characters, especially once 19 starts. Once it's Chernuchin running the show for those 2 years, he doesn't understand how any of the characters work.
No,
like he's writing just fucking insane shit, like. The episodes that he wrote are like, what in the fuck? I mean, like, Gone Fishing has fucking Finn go to Havana and fucking kidnap a guy and bring him back to the U.S.
I forgot about that one.
Fucking insane. And it's also like, it is the worst fucking stage for Havana. Like, it is so comically terrible. They have a backdrop of like a beach, just like a wall, like a matte painting, basically. Instead of green screening it, they did a matte painting of it. So you've got trees that are not moving in the background, that are not like swaying in the breeze or anything like that. And
Net Worth, which had the rapist, billionaires, and Motherly Love, which had the
Motherly Love is
teacher
nuts. Yeah, Motherly Love is great. That's the one with Sarah Winter.
But that's the problem. Most of these seasons all blur to me. I'll actually be honest. Really, the only episodes I have not been able to watch have been ones that the person just wasn't introduced properly, was the main character, or the character was a hothead in real life, like the Stephen Collins episode. I actually can't watch. I just don't like that episode as a whole.
We really liked that episode, but that episode was insane. Like, we liked that because of how batshit crazy it was.
I'm sure it did get batshit just for whatever reason, the way it started. But don't get me wrong. For me, it all kind of just blurs together, kind of like Criminal Minds. But I can actually name two seasons in Criminal Minds that I will never rewatch because they are garbage. Like, there's only like three good episodes in them. They ain't a good season. And I'll make them easy for you. It's the season before Aisha Tyler joins, where you have Jennifer Love Hewitt just poorly cast as a federal agent. And then
she was supposed to be an SVU. If Hargitay didn't resign, they were going to replace her with Jennifer Love Hewitt.
That is a stupid idea.
At the end of season 12, when both Maloney and Hargitay were in like kind of heated contract discussions with Dick Wolf and company, they like
the craziness
if,
that goes
if Maloney had if Maloney had if they had agreed to terms with Maloney instead of Hargitay, they were going to bring in Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Wow.
If that was the case, they brought her on the show, would have been
canceled. That might be the public record. They had to have had at least five other maybes, you know.
No. This is like very, because I mean, if you take a trip back to like 2000, what that was 2009 or 10.
No, I get it, but sure, there's got to be someone on the backup, you know.
I think it was her. I mean, it sounds like the discussions were pretty advanced.
Let's be glad it didn't happen. Anyway, I think she was fine in the episode, but I think over time it wouldn't have worked.
No. Oh, I think
there's so many one-shot characters who I see some people begging to come back, and I'm like, it'd be too much. You know, it'd be like, it's kind of like when your favorite stand-up comedian, if you have them on the mic an hour longer, they outstay their welcome. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are some one-shot characters is like, I would have liked to see more of. I think it's like season 5 or 6, Benson's helping a whistleblower. It's a great episode where they let Mike Post goes into more electronic score, and you kind of wonder what's happening to that whistleblower at the end. I'm like, well, see, if we, I'm sure if they re examine that case would get a little messy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I actually applaud the one, I know you guys aren't Amaro fans, but I actually applaud the one where they investigate the one violent kid that he arrested like years ago, and now he's trying to put a pencil in Carisi's.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Henry Messner. I like that one. That one I didn't like.
Right. Yeah.
I don't. So my issue isn't with Pino. It's with the way they wrote Amaro.
Yeah.
Like I think Pino had that, like you watch an episode with Amaro and there are scenes where like he's fucking charming and like you're like, wait, why isn't this the fucking Amaro we're getting? And then right. And then like 5 minutes later, he's driving to Philly to fucking beat up Maria's friend from the army. Like
literally. My issue was kind of with his first season. They weren't sure if Rollins and Amaro were going to be accepted. Everyone kind of instantly took to Rollins, but everyone was like, so is he the next Stabler or is he just a Curtis, you know, from the original show clone? You know, where he's just, hey, how's it going?
Mm-hmm.
They spent so much time early. And like, this is sort of why I like from my understanding, from having listened to a couple episodes of the official Law and Order podcast, Warren Light, after introducing Amaro and Rollins.
Hold up. There's an official Law and Order podcast.
I don't even think it's getting new episodes released.
It hasn't had an episode since like before COVID. It's like 2020 was like the last episode we did of it.
Damn. I think.
Well, this one, there was one. There was one because Warren Light was on the episode.
Stories?
No. Not these are
their. They talked about Stabler on it at one point, so I think it was 2021, maybe.
Yeah, it was 2021, but it's been like a year and a half. You don't need to. You don't. It's not up to date. He's not even the showrunner anymore, so you don't have to listen to.
Well, it's good to have something in the vault, just so you know. You know, just a fan.
Yeah. But he was talking about how the way that they were like just. Like jamming Amaro and Rollins' backstory into that first season, that fans like sort of were not into it. It was too heavy and too fast. And so like he learned his lesson from that, and so now you're seeing them slow rolling.
Yeah.
Well, that was pre-Twitter too. That was just like forums, you know, like that was.
So he read the forums, right?
Yeah. Or no, I guess Twitter existed then. Never mind.
Yeah.
Because Twitter launched in 2007.
But it was more intrusive. We would often see the scrolls at the bottom. It was like, sure. Please don't do that. That's distracting me from the episode.
Right. But he definitely like learned his lesson from them, and so then was like, okay, well, you're maybe gonna get 3 backstory episodes in a season, you know. And I feel like that's kind of what he was doing with Kat and Garland. And obviously Pisano. It's weird to me that Pisano came over before Graziano did. I'm not even gonna get into the whole Graziano.
I don't like him. I'm just leaving it at that. That's
Graziano,
the new showrunner.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, fair enough.
Because David Graziano's the showrunner now for this new season. But Graziano was the Coyote showrunner.
Right. I noticed that.
Yeah.
The current showrunner had worked on with the Octavia guy. There was another key thing. I know Diane Neal said on a recent, like, Brooklyn themed podcast.
Yeah, she's on all kinds of podcasts right now. She also does Twitter spaces all the time, which is weird.
Yeah.
Who even uses a Twitter space?
She's doing all kinds of live stand-up. I think she took her...
She's doing stand-up?
Yeah.
She has a comedy background.
She was at one point anyway.
Yeah, she even did an unaired special that had like a bunch of improv comedy with Dennis Leary and... other Adam Carolla types back in the day.
I fucking never knew that.
She had a modeling background and then
well, and she obviously has a background as a was she a No, not a lawyer. She was a finance person. She was a finance person. She was a finance person who had a pension for autoerotic asphyxiation.
Well, I don't know about that, but
no, her Amelia Chase, the character she played before it, like in Ridicule in season three.
Oh,
before,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, she was into rope play. Oh, because she strung up her friend. Remember, she killed her friend.
I just remember that she was a molester who got arrested, and she's like, "What are you?"
No, doing? No, she wasn't. Well, but she murdered their friend. She and Paige Turco murdered the third person who raped the exotic dancer.
Yeah, well, I'll take your word.
But that episode's amazing. You need to go back and watch it.
I like all the episodes. Let's put it that way, except three. Anyway, which is pretty good for most shows. I get it. Yeah, but. I just remember she referred to herself as a rapist in this interview before she became Casey. Mm-hmm. But she basically lost her political career because they asked her to just kind of step down. And she's like, I should have taken the bribe and kept going. And used that bribe money for more, campaign ads. But she was busy on plenty of other stuff, like a few true crime TV movies and NCIS. Where she was the female Gibbs, and The Following, where she was a crooked FBI agent. But she did say that they would always try and keep it, lively, have some new blood every other season. And it's like, sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they never figured out what to do with Lake when they had him.
Yeah.
They tried to add a person to the unit, and then it was like, oh, I guess we don't ever give him any story arcs.
It's like
he's there in the background to stand there. Like,
yeah,
they pretty much would have him do whatever Munch was doing or Cassidy had been doing, and it's like, well,
or what Jeffries had been doing before they screwed her over.
You know, I actually like Jeffries, but
I like Jeffries too. They fucked her over, though.
They did.
Yeah, replaced her with dirty. Finn, who's just really awesome.
No, Finn's awesome, but you could have two black cops on the unit.
I mean, I at least liked how they would make it seem natural, so you don't really know until after the fact, because then you have him in the follow-up episode, I refuse to work with you, you fired me.
But the reason that Jeffries got run off the unit, Rollins did what, 35 different things that were worse than anything Jeffries did, and never sniffed getting kicked off the unit.
It's weird that way. Anything for drama, baby. I don't think they need to add any new characters, really.
Well, I mean, it's comically. Do you remember any time in which Cragen was really working cases? Like, a captain shouldn't be on the street pounding the pavement working cases. Like, Liv should be in the office.
Other than that one trafficking episode and something with internal affairs or.
And the one where Warner's in the field, like intimately involved in the case, Cragen's a little more in that one, but that's because they're down a cop too. Yeah. So like the only time Cragen would be in the field is when he's like having to like step in because someone's out of pocket, you know, Liv should not be working every fucking case.
I think they did better this season where
it's been ridiculous for a very long time that she should not be working all of these cases to the degree that she is.
I call it the Captain Kirk from Star Trek syndrome. Last Ship was the worst of this too. Is like, yeah, there's no way the Navy commander is going to go to the island with a squad.
Yeah, no.
Right.
Why did they do it? It's just easier as a writer instead of writing a bunch of other indiscernible characters who the filmmaker then has to interpret. It's just easier for you to just have there be five characters who you follow around, but then, like you say, it really doesn't take all that much to just say, okay, no, Rollins or,
Well, and there's a way to do it. So they obviously, like with Carisi as the new, as like stepping into the role of the ADA, they're showing him doing things that a new ADA would be doing. Like that, you know, they started showing more and more of arraignments and then stuff like that.
Come back and help out with the SWAT team, which was even more twisted. It's like, hey, don't die.
But there's a way to do it with the Benson character where you have the captain like learning how to captain, and that can actually be interesting. And they don't do it ever. You know, she sort of has to manage McGrath a little bit, but that's kind of it. I hate McGrath.
I don't like McGrath at all.
No.
McGrath is Terry Serpico's, I think, bureaucrat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
I mean, you're supposed to hate him, but
I get it.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong. I mean, Serpico has been on, again, the show multiple times playing shitheads. Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know? He's always a shithead.
Yeah.
And then there was one episode where we had to feel sorry for him, where he's like, I'm on your side. And then he just kissed his ass. I'm like, yeah, sure. Sure you are.
Yeah. My home, my rage issues are, you know, making my home life terrible or whatever.
No, I agree. I think they can definitely give her and Finn more like what Van Buren, you know,
mm-hmm.
Essa Partha's character on the original show ended up doing, where she's just in a surveillance van across the street, you know, with a sniper,
yep.
You know, sent talking over the walkie talkie, you know, it's really all you need to do now, you know, and
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
just being a fan of these actors' filmography in general. I mean, that's always what I liked seeing Ice-T do in general in a B movie mm-hmm. he was in, or yeah. Some of these others, you know, it's just like they're awesome when they're already in charge. And they shout an order. Yeah, you know, like that's all you got to do.
Does it seem to you guys that they're still trying to backdoor the hate crimes pilot?
I'm not really. I think it's dead.
A little bit.
I really think it's dead.
I think they're good. I know they say it's dead, but they keep bringing all of the characters. They bring Cal Dune back. They bring Declan back. They bring all of these characters back. Mm-hmm. Like every, I don't know, 8 episodes, to the point where it's like it really feels like they're
hate crimes.
Or, well, I mean, they started the hate crimes unit in around Christmas of last year.
Yeah.
Well, and, I mean, but they still pop up. These other cops still pop up. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they're trying to backdoor pilot it for Peacock.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cause they can't, mm-hmm. I know they're very concerned about like, how the fuck are we going to show hate crimes on network TV?
Yeah.
No.
And so I feel like they're doing that for Peacock.
I thought it was a mistake at first. I mean, because I think Dick Wolf learned the hard way with, and don't get me wrong, I like these shows in their own right, Trial by Jury and Conviction, but the problem was there was just too much of them all at once at that
time. Oh, yeah.
And so mm-hmm. I think Dick Wolf realized, I'm not doing oversaturation. I got free FBIs. I got free.
Well, and learned his lesson with Chicago Justice, who no one gave a shit about either. You know,
like, I dug it. It was great.
You're the only person I know who's seen it. I promise.
I know many who saw it, but it's. By the time it got any ratings, it had already been canceled. But yes,
yeah.
That's why they brought Stone over. And I think Dick Wolf realized, okay, you know, when COVID hit and people, you know, and Apple and Peacock were really shitty that first year, I think everyone was just like, we're not going to spend money only to get canceled. Not going to do that. Mm-mm. And so I think that's just it. It's like, okay, just write them in. Just have them be a free 6-episode character. I mean, I already miss still Joel D. LaFuente. His
mm-hmm.
Morales. Yeah, Morales, mm-hmm. the tech guy who
would get
too emotional. He's like, I'm gonna kill this pedophile.
Yeah.
Well,
the pedophile had. Oh no, it was his nephew had been targeted by someone who was.
I forgot it was his nephew. Anyway,
because he'd given his nephew the computer. He gave his nephew the gift of the internet, and oh God, you know what happens when kids get on the internet.
Yeah,
they get perped on.
They watch everything. Oh, what is this, mommy? I like seeing stuff go into other stuff. No, don't do that. Yeah, I've kind of liked how they've just strived away from just stuff that was like all the talk. I mean, it was always interesting when every once in a while they would kind of tackle something that was off color before. Now they're kind of just beyond that. Now they're kind of.
I keep trying to get them to do an Army Hammer Cannibal episode. That's the thing I push for every couple months.
Remember,
every couple of months, I want them to do Army Hammer, like, you know, because I don't know if you guys followed that whole Army Hammer shit, but he was, you know, purportedly like,
no, I know,
trying to eat ribs and shit.
It was freakier than Scientology. They need a Tom Cruise episode though, where there's an untouchable actor who everyone hates.
Yeah,
but because they're professional, no one can touch the mobsters
because they look good running.
Yeah, there you go. I see what you did there. An Army Hammer one would be good. I think as close as they got was that one episode where they were finding all those bones. It was like 2 seasons ago.
Oh yeah, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. The Streetwalkers. That was as close as they got. And I thought
Jesus Christ, I've missed It's insane. I've seen every episode, and there will be like, seriously, you can name an episode and I'll be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like,
that was an episode. Or it's hard because now there's been five of them. So it's like, oh, which one where Casey takes on the military?
Wait, Prodigy? Or
which one where there's a crooked cop in their unit who gets tackled on the front desk?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I get it. They're pretty much like all these other shows that you've grown up watching or you do or don't like, where they're just focused on the characterization because they know that they've written themselves into a corner. And I mean, Criminal Minds is the same way. It's like, people want certain characters to come back, but the actors don't want to come back. So it's like, the only compromise you get is bring the other good characters back and give them their iconic moments. But unfortunately, that's how I am with Criminal Minds. It's like, after I think season 8, I stopped giving a shit about what famous actor is playing the killer, because it's all pretty much the same. It's 70s.
Yeah, it's the same formula. Yeah.
But at least it's a cool episode. It's like, oh, wow, that made me change my shirt 3 different times and break a sweat. So that's a good episode. But again, I can't tell you really what it was about other than that it did not bore me and it did get under my skin in a good way. It was creepy. It was effective. But then there were other ones where it's like, it started out good, but what the fuck was that ending? That was just lame. and there were a few early, otherwise good seasons of Criminal Minds early on where they would do that. It's like, that started out good. But who shot that guy? The fuck? Did I miss something? I'm with you guys. Everyone varies on this, but I do kind of get tired of other people kind of just acting like the show was always unintentionally funny. I would never say that. I mean, but kudos to the casting. They do need some more zany casting.
Yeah.
They had some.
Well, they've run out of, they have to have run out of pedos at this point.
Well, and I'm sure they went over budget on a few. I can only imagine how expensive the Jeremy Irons episodes was as the psychiatrist.
Well, and now I think that's part of why they haven't had Stabler in as many episodes a season.
Oh yeah, that had
because to you know that. Oh yeah, I mean, it seems pretty clear to me that was why Garland and Kat were written out.
Yeah,
that does make sense because I mean, even going back to the practice, that's why they got so creative, and that was actually their best move. Bringing James Spader and Bill Shatner and fired the cast, and then explain why they're gone. They couldn't get their jobs back or something. And I think
just rebrand the show.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I think too many CBS bosses want mindless entertainment. And the people on network TV are like, we're going to keep being edgy because naturally, organically edgy.
I mean, SVU's always lived in that.
Yeah.
That fucked up headspace.
Now it has crazy stuff happen before 10 o'clock that years ago would have gotten them an FCC fine. I think in both an episode of that and a Chicago Justice episode, there was a suck my ass line. I'm like, whoa, that you would have gotten canceled back.
Yeah,
in the
but 90s. they're at least leaving the whole part out. They can't say that.
Oh, they said it in an episode.
No, asshole.
Just suck my ass.
Yeah. No, I know, but they just can't add the hole to that.
You just can't drop anyone's pants. That's the only
thing. Yeah. Yeah,
it's the only thing no one will tread. They will imply that the character's naked, but they will not. No, they will not go NYPD.
That's so weird to me.
It's just so funny stuff years ago that would have gotten you in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Maloney's ass is cutting through those pants at every time there is
too many memes were made of it, and he knows it.
Oh. If I looked like Maloney, I'd fucking wear tight ass pants too. Like,
you already saw him on everything of him on Oz, so I think we're good.
Yeah. Nope.
Right.
No, we're not good. We need more.
I don't think they'll do any new Law and Order spinoffs. I think it's like with FBI and One Chicago, and no more crossovers with those. You know, I'm pretty sure. Because they did kind of do that with FBI. They had, what's her name? Tracy Spiracato's character come over, and that was it. I'm pretty sure, even though it was a Wolf own, I'm pretty sure CBS said, that's a conflict of interest. No, sir. Can't do that.
CBS is going to kill any of that. But I think Peacock,
because in a way,
I think for Dick Wolf and NBC, that a Law and Order spinoff that's just for Peacock would be like their fucking flagship show, you know?
It would.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
At the same time, I kind of feel like Hate Crimes is already FBI Most Wanted. Like, that's literally every other episode. They are killing a mass murdering bank robber or a white supremacist, you know? So I feel like that's already Hate Crimes.
Yeah, it's never stopped Dick Wolf before, though.
No, it hasn't.
He's going to keep making as much money as possible.
Well, just to answer your question, I think he would have to kill one show first, is what I'm saying.
I don't think so. I think he would do a 13-episode season for Peacock and just roll with it that way.
Well, who knows? Maybe he'll come up.
Or even an 8 or 10-episode season. I could absolutely see it happening.
He'll have Lee or Rene Belser or one of his other head writers say, hey, or Craig Turk.
That was Warren Light's baby. Like, that was his, that was what he was going to do for the spinoff. And, you know, obviously he's taking a little time off, but I think that's still going to happen.
Maybe.
I mean, I haven't heard anything about it, but they keep bringing all of these characters back that really feels like, and I mean, fuck, are they going to do a Gang Unit one too? Like, I mean, they keep going back to that,
like last Maurice year, they proposed like the For the Defense spinoff, but never came anything out of that either. But
yeah.
They kept bringing Barra back around that time too, and that was coming up.
So I think what spooked him about 5 years ago was when there was that one douchebag writer who had written a bunch of Chicago PD and even SWAT episodes, and he made all those anti Black Lives Matter comments.
Oh, well, no, he was going to be on the organized crime.
It
wasn't Matt Olmsted, but it was a writer who was staffed on organized crime too.
Right. And they fired him, and then Olmsted stepped in, and he still ran away because of creative differences.
Yeah.
And it had creative differences. You know, I think that's just it. No one can afford him right now. Like, that happened with Amazon's Jack Ryan, and don't get me wrong, still a great season, but it took them going for 3 different showrunners before they could actually film an episode and agree on the tone. And and I get it. You know, writers don't want to half-ass it, because that's where they're not. You can't write what you're not interested in. You just can't. Oh,
absolutely not.
You absolutely can't. You can half-ass it, and it becomes.
It's gonna. Yeah. Well, and what you want to be the one that kills the show?
Yeah.
I mean, they miraculously made it through Chernuchin. SVU did. Like, it was on. It was like knocking on death's door at the end of season 20. They almost didn't come back.
Mm-hmm. Eh.
No, like, it really happened.
I believe it.
Like, he almost killed the show. Because it was that bad.
Well, what was the big infamy?
No, I mean, it was the show was so bad that the ratings were in the toilet. Well, like, that almost killed the show.
I'm just trying to remember which one subplots were not popular that season. I'm sorry.
Because those were the Stone seasons.
Yeah, the Stone season.
Okay, well. I like Stone. It's all good. I'm the worst. Sorry.
No. I mean, I don't care if you like Stone.
Tragic.
I mean, kind of, but like, it was one of those things that, like, did it feel earned? Not really. They just kind of dropped it in as a fucking, like,
SVU is just a weird abyss of tragedy every year, and I somehow just can't take my eyes off it. Because of how morbid it is.
Yeah, but they, like, it's in 19 and 20, they just stopped, like, earning moments at all. Everything was just, like, random, like, nothing. Just,
like, thrown together, like, here, see if this works, kind of thing.
The openings would be more awkward. That was the thing. That's why I had to be more on the mode. I will say the promos for them even got more worse, where it looked like a Lifetime thriller. It's like, what's going on?
Well, it played like a Lifetime thriller too, sadly.
Fair enough. Altogether, yeah. As long as, like you guys say, they just don't get distracted and they let every show breathe. Because I feel like a lot of the CSIs really went downhill. Like, they brought CSI back, and I absolutely detest it. I'm just like, you have all these characters I grew up liking, and you're not using any of them, and I don't like any of the crime cases, and I just want to fast forward. Yeah. So yeah. I get it. Every show can go past its saturation. Everyone was kind of miffed on X-Files. I actually like the new Star Treks, but hey, if you don't like them, you don't like them. You know, Star Trek was more kind of just, we're going to tell you one side of the same coin, you know? And I think everyone just found out the hard way, like, oh, it's not mindless like Star Wars. And then that's the other irony. People got into these Star Wars shows is like, oh, we actually want to have a plot, you know? We flesh out the world. So it is funny how you never can predict. Again, you can't predict success all the time, but you also can't predict what your audience is saying. People thought, oh, Star Trek is just a campy, you know, space cop show. I'm like, no, it's trying to be more than that. It's trying to be spiritual and philosophical while having, again, something that's not that you can syndicate. And I do applaud, again, most of this Law and Order stuff for building its own world and then going in new directions. And then, like you say, if it has a misstep, you can still skip the episode without feeling like it's time you can't get back. Cause that's where I just really pull the plug on so many shows where I'm like, hey, so it all didn't mean anything in the end. Mm-hmm. That ending is 10 years, I'll never get back, you know?
Yeah.
And I get it. If no one can keep up, that's a shit ton of seasons to get through. And
24 seasons is a lot.
I mean,
I'm completely joking. it's the longest running show in primetime history.
More than a soap
long, longest running hour long. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
I can't think of any other show that I actually like 20 plus seasons of, really. I mean, I'm not a Gunsmoke guy, so
yeah. Well, Gunsmoke didn't make it that long, did it? I think Gunsmoke made it to like 18 or 19 or something.
NCS is on 20 now.
Yeah, but well, NCS is never, NCS can't catch up with SVU unless SVU goes off the air. Yeah.
No, and it's more, again, it's like Bones. It's more of a comedy and the mystery, but it learned the hard way in the later years is like they realized, hey, all these people, we don't need Abby, but we kind of need to know Zovak, but we still kind of, it's at its best when it has five episode arcs and when everyone's just being funny. That's just it. Because like when they introduced these new characters, they had to establish, okay, they're not Ziva or Tony clone 2.0 or 3.0. They're their own special kind of weird.
Right.
And McGee's there because we just need someone other than, you know, Gibbs, who can give the dry mannerisms.
Yeah.
And they give the director something to do now, where he's actually, Rocky Carroll's character, Vance, he's actually directing episodes. So I'm like, see, cool. Now he's getting, he's going to probably do some cool stuff when the show actually does it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's all so they can get DGA benefits.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because DGA benefits are the best.
They really are. It is actually shocking how much more they pay than the.
Well, not just that, but like your health and pension and all that shit, like, right? Is so much better. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and actually, NCIS, if there's anything it's doing well, they actually introduced Rachel Takoden, who a good character actress from movies like Total Recall and Predator 2, who I actually thought had retired. And now they introduced her as a main key character. And I'm like, yeah, they're totally bringing her back.
Is she Nancy Takoden's sister?
Let's see.
Didn't they both? I thought they were sisters. So.
Yeah, they're sisters. Okay. She's more like a backup Broadway singer.
Yeah. She's been in SVUs before.
Yeah.
Nancy, yes.
And Rachel was on the only Law and Order, which I didn't like, which is Law and Order LA, as the main district attorney.
Yeah, I felt like that had some potential. I actually stuck with it the whole time, but it didn't take much because it was only on 13 episodes.
That one went south because they kept trying to have the guys come over on SVU.
And well, it wasn't just that, but they also like had to like it sounds like Skeet wasn't working out, and so they shit-canned him.
They shit-canned him, and then they aired the episodes out of order, and then they inserted other bullshit, and then they just didn't make use of the LA scenario. It's like,
right,
you know,
right.
You can make this more noirish. You can do all sorts of crazy, cool shit that would make a James Ellroy novelist, you know, proud.
Right.
And
yeah. Or eventually the Bosch, you know, Bosch shows ended up doing, you know, go that route. Yeah.
Yeah. The closer in Bosch saga really, they pretty much had LA covered. The Shield. Come on. You know, to go back to Dylan McDermott, Dark Blue. Hello. Yeah. They have covered LA. So if there was, I live in the shithole that is Dallas, Texas, they could have done every other state and inserted it as part of the Law and Order thing, what would North Carolina be like? Ooh, that could be almost a True Detective type thing where you're like, this is the most bizarre cold case ever. And by the way, there is no answer to this. We only got a segment, a quarter of the answer. But this has been a delight having you guys on for this giant round table. where can we find you on the interwebs? I know Danielle, you are on Twitter.
I am on Twitter. And that's
awesome.
Yeah.
Josh, where can we reach you?
Well, I could spend so much time plugging
yourself watching summaries.
When I'm not like breaking myself,
doing your own commentary. What the hell?
So, yeah, I'm on my personal Twitter is at Old Man Dugan, D-U-G-G-A-N, and then obviously, not to be confused.
They should do a parody of you, Duke Nukem.
And then obviously I have the podcast co-host with Adam.
Everyone, check it out. Even if you don't agree or you love his take, he does a good job of just finding story notes, the locations of where the
episode is. We get super weird. We'll go down rabbit holes inspired by the episode.
I was really guffawing at the episode where young Emily Deschanel pre-bones you guys.
That's 10 hours of bone sessions,
right?
I think is what that episode's called. We get weird. We do a lot of like weird deep dives.
Your co-host is really good too.
And both of us will like,
you guys are your own.
We fact check the show a lot, and
That's good.
When they go wrong, they go wrong. We can go in any number of directions in any given episode, but yeah, we're weirdos, I guess. we're Munch My Benson on all the social media.
This was years before we even found out that Mariska Hargitay is actually a rape counselor in real life. It's like, if there's anything this show does well, is life imitating art and it changing everyone as a whole. I loved how I think Diane Neal in that same interview was joking. She's always joked how the writers would always say to them, we're afraid of being, on the FBI's predator list just because we're looking up
heinous crimes. Jesus Christ. The stuff that we have to look up for the podcast, like there's no way we're not on watch lists.
Yeah.
Like just because of Google term searches, we're not looking for images or anything like that, but the search terms are fucking insane that we have to look up all the time.
Google freaks me out even more. I will type in something and I will see 500 things. Wait, no.
Yeah.
Who the hell said that? Was I thinking that? Jesus, no.
Right.
How many, there have been multiple episodes of SVU that have talked about rectal probe electroejaculation.
Yeah.
Like I've had to look that up.
There was mm-hmm. another term which is actually used for a different term. And I think they were using it to mean bipolar, and my sister fact checked it, and she's like, nah, that does not mean that.
No.
That would actually offend the person if they actually knew what you were saying.
Yeah. But I mean, a show that has multiple times brought out rectal probe electroejaculation, you're going to have to look up weird shit for this show. And so there's no way we're not on watch.
They must have been at a nightclub and heard something off. I don't know. Well, did B.D. Wong make a off-color joke on set? I don't know. There's a character I would like them to bring back, but at the same time, I'm sure he was just depressed playing the, FBI liaison counselor.
Well, yeah, and then in season 13, both he and Warner were like dropped down to. I mean, he left on his own steam because he was going to do a wake, but they kind of boned. I can't think of her real name. Tamara Tooney. They kind of boned her and just
more Broadway because she was in a Denzel Washington directed movie recently that didn't make any money, and I was like, I want to see this movie.
yeah
You don't shit on Denzel.
no but like it's a paycheck and her
that would actually be crazy.
her days are very easy. You know, when she's on the show, she is just coming in for, you know, spew awful things in a clinical way. And then, you know, her day was done in 2 hours, you know.
After a while, they wanted to have cameos by Elizabeth Hendricks's character from both the original and Criminal Intent. Yeah. And I'm sure she got tired of doing that. She's like, okay, yeah, Leslie Hendricks exiting stage right. I've done this too much.
I'm sure.
And I get it. As an actor, you want to challenge yourself. You're like, I've done 10 years of that. I got to do something new.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, again, just like Henry Winkler was saying in that recent Inside the Actor Studio special, he's like, yeah, I'm not gonna play the Fonz anymore because that's all people see me as, and I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, nor should he. He's better than that,
right?
Yeah. Well, thank you all for this long progression, and I only hope the show ends on a high note, you know.
Yeah, no, but thanks for having us.
But because we love it, we got to revisit again, catch up,
you know. I think it's never gonna end.
It probably won't.
It's gonna just go forever, and I'm gonna have to keep recording.
Whenever Marsh is done, it'll be done. But I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Even if it sucks, it'll still be for me better than most shows on the air. Where I do want to press the cancel button and say, "Do not resurrect." You know, you have wronged me as a fan.
Yeah,
and I'm not attacking. I'm just saying, I don't need 5 more seasons of this. It was good. You know,
right.
I've already pressed the cancel button with CSI, but I can do 5 more of Law and Order.
Sure.
Or at least the other spinoffs that are on now.
Yeah.
And I'm sure hopefully someone will come to their good graces and say, okay, we're good. No more.
I mean, Hargitay's gonna end up retiring at some point.
Right.
She doesn't need. I mean,
I'm just waiting for her to bring back her real life husband in as that.
Yeah.
Assistant DA. Well, but this time have him be a judge now. And she's like, I disagree. Captain Benson, all I've known you.
Then she'll stand up and start screaming at him. Munch did in a, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's how you end it. Yes. That would, as she acts unprofessional and then she pulls a shaft and throws her back and says, fuck you. And they actually say fuck you on network TV, or they bleep it out and then you go to the, and there you go. That's how you subscribe to Peacock for the uncensored version.
Yes.
That would actually be funny if they did, if they pulled a good wife and they said, do you want the uncensored version? Subscribe to Peacock. And then I'll say, motherfuckers, you got my money. I'm only paying it once a year to watch Girls 5 Ever or Psych and then canceling it the next day.
Exactly.
Oh, kudos all. I'm glad you could join the fun.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
You're done.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening.
It's a Jacked Up Review Show.